Greetings from the Southern Cohort of the UC Coro System-Wide Leadership Collaborative. Our cohort challenge is titled Best Practices for Leading System-Wide Change Projects, and our deliverables include the production of podcast interviews with influential people in the area of change management theory and applications. My name is Colin Dimmick. I'm the Assistant Vice Chancellor of Environment, Health, and Safety at the University of California, Los Angeles. I'm joined in this interview by my colleagues Terry Winbush and Kerry Bass. Our guest for this podcast is Dr. John Mazziotta, the Vice Chancellor for Health Sciences and the CEO for UCLA Health, who has been a change leader for many years in many positions here at UCLA.
I'm Kerry Bass. I'm the Senior Director for Communications and Organization Performance at Housing and Hospitality Services.
I'm Terry Winbush. I'm the Senior Director of Labor Relations and Employee Relations for the UC San Diego campus.
I'm John Mazziotta. I'm the Vice Chancellor for Health Sciences and the CEO of UCLA Health.
Tell us a little bit about your background and experience in change management.
So I've been on the receiving end of change management as a trainee here and a faculty member, and I've been the chair of a department that had 147 faculty. I've been the dean, and now I have my current roles. So I've been on both sides of it. In terms of trying to change an organization, we've made a lot of efforts in recent years to align our activities, which has meant a lot of changes along the way. So aligning the clinical activities of a business, the UCLA Health System, with the academic activities of a academic unit, the School of Medicine.
What does the people side of change management mean to you?
It means one thing. What's in it for me? If you can't answer that question, you might as well not bother. In our change management issues, before we go public with it, we ask, what is the answer to what's in it for me for every person that's going to be affected? And if we don't have a good answer, we don't do it. Okay. That's what's going to either produce enormous resistance or an open mind. Not necessarily acceptance, but at least an open mind.
So what do you think is different between higher education versus corporate or, you know, UC Medical?
Well, a corporate structure, the leadership has authority and power to do things. In an academic environment, individuals like me have authority, but no power. So in an academic environment, power only comes from long-term trust and being true to your word and delivering on every commitment, no matter how informal. As soon as you stop doing any of those things, you no longer have any power. You still are the vice chancellor, field marshal, whatever your badge says, but that produces zero. So academics, because you can't tell people what to do, you have to earn their trust and get their agreement by consensus, which is reasonable. That's why academics is a great thing. And deliver change through trust that the right things are going to be done for the right reasons. It's academics also in most institutions is shared governance at a faculty level. So an administrative decision, it is not a standalone decision. It's a decision that's made in partnership with the Academic Senate and the other half of the governance arrangement.
What do you see as the advantages and disadvantages of centralizing change management or a change management office?
The advantage of a centralized approach is there's a single message, and the messaging and the communication can be made consistent, transmitted widely. The goals and the purpose are always there. The disadvantage of a centrally driven change is the reaction, I'm being controlled from above, right? Which is going to result in the usual result that you get, which is change is good, no change is better, the usual reaction.
So you talked a little bit about messaging, and I was wondering, what do you think is the most important aspect of communication during a change process?
Being direct and being transparent. I've talked about this idea of changing our funds flow and that might affect compensation. And I found that the leadership, myself, the dean, the head of the health system, we're in the process of doing it now, but to every department faculty meeting, there's 27 departments, 3,300 faculty, that's a lot of time, but it was time extremely well spent. And we said, you know, we're not here to lecture you, we're not here to tell you, we're going to tell you the basic framework, but this is something you're going to be part of developing, but we're here to answer your questions. And then we heard innumerable myths about what we were trying to do, right? And rumors and gossip mill. So now in the later stages of that, I already have all of those. So I say, this is what we're trying to do. This is what it's not. And this is what it is. Now within that context, let's just talk about it. Tell us what's on your mind. What are you worried about? So that direct and transparent, and we've done it with websites so that we can say, this is what we're doing. This is the timetable. Here's your involvement. If you hear otherwise, it's wrong. And come to us and we'll answer your specific question.
So it sounds like that consistency of message, the maybe tailoring of the message depending on what's in it for me.
Exactly.
Did that help to build trust going out there and answering those tough questions?
I think it does. Time will tell. Mm-hmm. But I certainly don't think it hurt. And, you know, it's a lot of time invested in doing it. But, you know, I think that hearing it firsthand, there's not a substitute for that.
Mm-hmm. And how about the timing of the communication? You talked about building website, going out to meetings. Is there more to that timeline in terms of how you roll the communication out?
So all of this is preceding any actual change, and it's actually preceding the development of what the components of that change will look like, so that we just repeat it with more and more detail and more refinement and, you know, then actual dates of when what's going to happen and that sort of thing. So I think you can't stop. Mm-hmm. You have to just get it right from the beginning and go with it.
What's the best strategy for recognizing and dealing with resistance to change?
Again, I think it's transparency and having a really good answer to what's in it for me. You know, if the vast majority of the management of people is going to be a positive long-term effect for them, then the resistance, the dissenters, will be a small minority and will not prevail.
Why do you think people resist change?
They're anxious. They understand the status quo. And any change is a threat. Even if it looks enormously positive when presented, they're always wary of the, yeah, but what's going to happen then? People are comfortable with what they know.
Sort of that fear of the unknown.
Yeah.
Yeah. How does one go about determining the necessary resources to implement a proposed change?
I think you have to do it like a strategic planning process. You have to go through the entire detail, set your goals, what are the missions under those goals, lay it all out, work up the timetable, work up the resources required. It has to be a very disciplined and rigorous process to be successful.
What is a reliable mechanism for handling unexpected circumstances that arise during a change process?
That will happen inevitably and invariably, uh-huh. That things will occur that you hadn't anticipated.
Yeah.
You have to be direct and say, well, you know, we hadn't anticipated that. Transparent, and then say, here are our options for adjusting to that new information.
Do you have an example of a situation where something unexpected happened during a change process?
Well, yeah, we have, a variety of agreements with organizations as a healthcare system. And we have a process for changing how we structure those agreements. And then suddenly an outside group weighs in or a law changes and we can't do it exactly as we had planned. So we have to say, okay, time out. Here's the new adjustment. Let's step back. Let's make sure we got it right. And what you learn from that is that these, you know, you have an endpoint in mind, but the endpoint's not realistic. It's a constant evolution. When we get to this and it's all implemented and everything has changed, we'll change it again because we have to be able to react to the real world.
What are viable strategies for a campus or the UC system when managing simultaneous changes?
I think it's just the same principles, but, you know, far more complicated because you're asking people to adjust to many things at the same time. And that's going to make each one harder because there's distraction, there's competing motivations, there's double or triple the anxiety. So it's hard.
Yeah, and sometimes you have one that depends on another.
Correct.
And then same resources being utilized.
So do you try and split them up?
Sometimes you can't because there's some temporal window that you have to accomplish both. But it's better to at least stagger them, I would think, so that you can say, okay, let's use the successes of the first one, see how well that went. Now we're going to do the same approach for this one, and we're going to have you participate in the same way.
So building trust.
Yeah, trust is the key.
So what are your methods for tracking the changes you are engaged in?
With all of these things, like a strategic plan, we set out the goals and the sub-goals. We apply a timetable to those and resource requirements. And then we make that public so that you can see if we're making progress, if we're not, if we're making progress, which units are helping us to succeed in that, which ones haven't kept up. It's a high motivator for people. They're just competitive and they'll say, hey, you know, this thing is out there and we don't look so good on it. So I think those are, you know, important to keep things on track.
And when you say you publish it, is it on a website that everyone has access to or just internal people?
With some of the changes I mentioned for UCLA Health, we'll put those on an intranet. When I was department chair, we did it with a much more simplistic approach, as we would just show slides at regular faculty meetings and that kind of thing. It doesn't matter how you do it. I think it's just the stakeholders need to see what the progress is or, you know, where there's problems.
How do you measure the potential for a proposed change to bring about improvements? And is it feasible to run performance models in advance?
So in the health system, we almost always do that. We model the whole thing. We play it all the way out. We show people how it's going to affect them as an individual. And we model all that so that we can say, here's the way it would look. Here's what it'll mean to you. Here's what it'll mean to the organization. If it's financial, sometimes what we'll do is let a unit have a shadow arrangement. So they have their status quo way of managing their budget or whatever, and they also see running in the background the new model and how they would be performing there and how it looks day to day, week to week, year, at the end of the year. And that gives people a lot of comfort. If you have a situation where you can do that and you have the tools to do it, it's really helpful.
What are the challenges involved in realizing and following through with a decision to unplug a proposed change?
Well, I think from a leadership point of view, that's really amounts to saying, okay, we made a mistake. Let's be honest about it. For the following reasons, we misjudged something. There'll be some loss of face in that, I think. If the reasons are plausible and not simply laziness or some other situation that's really going to be embarrassing, certainly when the external forces cause a change or an abandonment, that's everybody understands that. But I think you just have to own it when it goes bad. You just have to say, you know, here's what happened, here's why, here's what we're going to do.
What are the important characteristics senior leaders should show when introducing and managing change initiatives within an organization?
So as I've said earlier, I think you have to take it directly to all the stakeholders. You have to answer all their questions, and you have to have the good answer for what's in it for me. You can't just send out an email and say, okay, by January, this is how we're going to look. I mean, that will cause all kinds of problems, and I think people want to see that you're, number one, put in the effort, and it's important enough, and you're going to put in the time, and you're going to talk to each of them individually if need be. That demonstrates your level of engagement and the importance of it, and you get a chance to explain why the change is key for the institution. You know, in healthcare, small changes, given that we have a margin that is so tiny, with billions of dollars coming in, billions of dollars coming out, the slightest misstep and you're upside down. You want to make it clear to the people you're asking to change that every single aspect has to be working right, or we can set off a domino effect that could lead us into big problems.
How do you keep abreast of those external forces and maybe be able to predict it or stay ahead of it?
So the forces that will have big effects are government. So we have a lot of government relations input, what the climate is, what people are saying, what people are hearing, what bills are in preparation, what components of those might affect healthcare. So government is one area. Corporate is another area. What is the climate? What's happening with pharmaceuticals? What's happening with consolidation of healthcare systems? What could we anticipate? What about our local competition? What kinds of people are they hiring? What directions are they going? What are they marketing? So we have market research teams. We have teams who look at where do patients come from? How happy are they when they're here? We monitor enormous amounts of social media just to get a sense of how are we doing? What's the word out there on the street? You can't have an interaction with anything these days without it being on social media. So we've had to develop a whole industry of processing of all that so that we could look at how we're doing, what people like, what they don't.
Is there anything that you can add to our body of questions here?
Maybe something worth thinking about is, if it's a big change, how do you decide the threshold for taking that on or not? We spend a fair amount of time deciding which wars to fight, because you can't do them all, and you can't ask people to be changing every day, every week. So prioritizing what changes are most critical is really hard. So we had to install electronic medical record. This was now 6 years ago. So we went from paper to electronic at the stroke of midnight. Everything, every hospital, every clinic, every doctor, every nurse, everything. 11:59, it was paper. Midnight, it was electronic. Talk about change management. I mean, we had armies of people ready. We trained people for a year. The training was $100 million, just the training. We had scribes, we had handholders, we had people with vests on with different uniforms, hundreds of them. Because, you know, something goes wrong, I mean, we're taking care of people there, some of the sickest people in the Western United States. This thing doesn't work. People don't know how to use it. You can't order a drug. You can't order blood. You can't finish an operation. You know, and that clock's going to strike midnight whether you're changing someone's liver or, you know. And it worked. And there was enormous resistance. You know, oh, it's not so complicated. I got to learn a whole new thing. And everybody wanted to negotiate, you know, but that's great. Happy to do it. But, you know, I need this. Or my thing is special. Or he said, there's no special. There's one thing. When we get that thing in, we'll talk about customization where it seems to be necessary. But, you know, that was a very tense situation.
How did you make it work? I mean, I get there's a lot of resources, but that's not enough. How did you get people to buy into it? How did you get it to go flawlessly?
Well, it was never flawless, but, you know, we anticipated the problems that would be. With this thing, we said, if there's a problem, first of all, we have a way to route that problem immediately to someone who will do two things. One, they will own it. I hear your problem. I'm coming there to solve it now. right? Number two, they knew exactly how to solve every kind of problem. There was no problem encountered that wasn't anticipated. But that was done through modeling and practicing and training, and you know. And so I think when you take on a big change, you have to be willing to invest the resources to have just an enormous overkill in the problems that could occur. And no one has ever said, yeah, we did that and there were problems and they weren't solved. Never heard it once. Yeah, I had a problem with it, but there was somebody right there for me. 1:30 in the morning, first day, right there, standing right next to me, you know. And when you get down to what's in it for me and why am I not special, you know, that one was harder. We could say from an institutional point of view, we have to function this way to be a modern healthcare system. 99% said, well, it's the next thing, I gotta learn it.
The music in this podcast is The Fifth Life by Circus Marcus.